Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. This is Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom Radio. And I changed the name from Cowboy Wisdom NLI to Straight Cowboy Wisdom because this is an insightful radio show about expanding people's wisdom with innovation and talent to live their life. And tonight, we're going to expand your wisdom about editing, publishing, how to publish, and how Amy published her books, what her books are about. My guest is Amy Ligner. She's got a book out, a new one coming out towards the 20th, around the 20th of October, called The Hero's Companion. She's got Sapphire Storm, Talent and Lowry 13, out of the Talent and Lowry 13, Talent and Lowry series. She's also got The Angel Chronicles. It's Until Next Time, The Gilded Wings, and The Privilege. And it is a privilege to have Amy on the show. Without any further ado, I'm going to welcome Amy to the show. Welcome, Amy. How are you?
I'm well, Robert. Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Privilege,
so it goes both
that's
ways.
That's the theme of tonight, is privilege.
There
anyway,
you go.
Amy,
I love that word.
Yeah. And, Amy, let's tell them a little bit about the new book you have coming out that's got a real pretty cover. If you go to the where I posted this, you'll see it. And you'll see the book. But what's the book about, and how does it continue with from the Sapphire Storm and Talent and Lowry 13?
Well, the Talent and Lowry series is a suspense adventure series, and it started with the book 13. They each are standalone stories, however. You don't have to read 13 to understand The Hero's Companion, although once you read The Hero's Companion, you'll want to go back because these are really good adventures according to these wonderful letters I'm getting from readers. Each one is its own specific adventure, and they're all based on very real places. And such as 13 was an adventure that took you to the Winchester House, connected the Winchester House in San Francisco to Jack the Ripper, which oddly enough was able to be linked to Glastonbury. The second one, the Sapphire Storm, was an entirely new adventure with three very strange links between Shakespeare and the Cup of Christ. So, you know, you're gonna go to very amazing places. And the upside is, to me anyway, and the privilege that I'm having is that fans keep writing to me and saying they're running to Google as soon as they read these books to see what all these things are really about. And oddly enough, I was able to link everything. And now with The Hero's Companion, we're going to start out with Athena atop the Acropolis. Now, this is present day. We're not going to go back in history or back in time, but there is a link between Athena and an old monastery and a very famous place where the walls came tumbling down. And that is where Leia, who is the head of research, she is a librarian at the New York Public Library, and Gareth Lowry, her companion that she met in 13 when he was on a hunt to find something very specific. They're back together again. They are still a team, and The Hero's Companion is going to lead you to some extremely interesting places that you wouldn't think had anything to do with each other, but oddly enough, they did. So it's kind of an exciting series because of the research. I love doing research, and my mother is a librarian, and I think I caught that bug from her. And it's just very exciting. You're able to go to all these different places, and then you're able to run to your Google and look everything up. And sure enough, there are very odd links to places out there in the country and across the globe, which is fun. It's a lot like 6 degrees of separation. Something you thought wouldn't be linked to something else actually can be. So it's a lot of fun, actually, to be inventive with the fiction, but be able to use the nonfiction as well. So I'm very excited about this series. And you did mention the cover, and the covers of these books are beautiful. I give absolute A pluses to Suspense Publishing. They do such an incredible job. So not only do the books satisfy the readers, but the covers are just actually stunning to have on the bookshelves too. So they help me out in that way as well. So I'm very lucky.
And that makes it easier. But how is fiction really has a lot more real day stuff, has more actual investigation and background looking up than maybe even a autobiography, do you feel?
Well, of course, an autobiography is going to be, about someone's life, but I really think I like doing fiction as well. I do the Angel Chronicles, which is, of course, a YA series, and although the locations are real, the actual story, of course, is pure and utter fiction. And with the Talon Lowry series, it's just very exciting because all of these places still exist. So being able to really hunt, I research a book for months on end to make sure that these things are real and that I can certainly prove how the connection is done. But, of course, there's still fiction in it. And it's nonfiction wrapped within fiction. I think really when the Da Vinci Code hit, not to use an old title, but when that hit, people started really loving the fact that the history that's surrounding them, buildings, myths, legends, etc., could actually be very, very real. And people have been proving so many things with all of this new research and technology and the digital age, etc., that we all have, that it's a lot of fun. It keeps your mind working constantly, because these books are very much like a puzzle, like a crossword puzzle. And you want to know where these adventures are going to end and how they get where they're going. And the upside is the fictional characters of Leigh and Gareth are so loved by people. And again, that's, believe me, I'm completely humbled by that, that they're following along and they really feel like they're with Leigh and Gareth as they're going through all this. And being able to research everything and, all the way to what the inside of a cave looked like or looks like now, and being able to be very realistic about it, I think helps the reader come into the story. And they really want to be there. They want to go there. And some of these places, of course, they visited. So the Winchester House, of course, is in San Francisco, right outside of San Francisco, with an amazing story. And a lot of people, of course, go visit there. So with 13, they can now look at it differently and say, oh, well, there's something in this house that actually can be linked, to Jack the Ripper, which you wouldn't assume it could possibly be. So they're a lot of fun. You get the fiction part with the good characters that you're taking a ride with, but you're also getting the history that's actually still out there. So that's fun to combine the two of them.
And if you go to the talentandlowry.blogspot, it's Talent and Lowry, A-N-D Lowry. It's T-A-L-L-E-N-T-A-N-D Lowry, LOWER.blogspot.com. You can see Talent and Lowry 13, The Scent of Firestorm, and the new book, The Hero's Welcome. And if you go to the right companion, go to the blogspot link there and go see all the Angel Chronicles. But you tie Jack the Ripper and into the Winchester House. How does that play out? How did that kind of connect in a loop? Just give people a general synopsis on how that played out.
Okay. Well, it was very odd, actually. This all came to me when I was sitting thinking about my favorite place, which is the New York Public Library. If they would allow me to live in their basement, I would. I love that building. I absolutely love the history of that building. And I was thinking very much about what could be buried in the cornerstone that Mr. Carnegie laid when that building was made. And I got a fantastic idea, and all of a sudden it just kind of came together. I really worked very hard on the research, as I always do, because I want it to be as accurate as possible. And because of the fictional part of the story, it was quite easy to link the Winchester House and Jack the Ripper because of one thing that occurred in both of those time periods on both of those streets. And then I went on to link Jack the Ripper to Glastonbury, which of course is very famous that everybody knows, not to King Arthur, mind you, but a tower that rests in Glastonbury. And when people found out that you could link those two things, they were very, very excited. And, you know, I get a lot of letters with questions, things like that, and how you can do that. And it's just a lot of fun. Same with the Sapphire Storm and now with the Hero's Companion. And I'm already at work on number four. So it's just a whole lot of fun for people. It's adventure and it's suspense, but they also get to really get to know Leia and Gareth, and that's the part that I really like, because more and more, as the books come out, the background of Leia and Gareth is coming forth, and people are really appreciating who they are and what their background is and the relationship that's being formed. So you can have the adventure and the suspense right along with the, you know, romance, friendship, etc. So it's fun because I get to combine all different genres for this one series. So it's a lot to take on, but it's a lot of fun.
I see that. And so where do you think, when people start writing books and they want to make a series, where do you feel they try to put too much in one book and not enough to string it out to make enough books? How do you keep from putting too much in one and not enough in the other? You know what I'm trying to say there?
Well, I understand. What I always say to people, though, is when you want to write a book, and it's very, very important to you. I mean, anyone can write, as we know. We can write a journal, we can write a diary, etc. There are only a few, though, that have that gift, the passion inside them, and I've been so lucky to work with so many of them because I edit. The Wright Companion also is an editing house, and I worked as an editor for about 20 years. So being able to help them now, debut authors especially, it's very exciting to see what they come up with. But when you sit down to write a book, you shouldn't really think to yourself, oh, I'm going to write a series. I didn't, actually. 13 was going to be one book. But then it did so well and was so interesting, and I caught the bug that I kept doing it. But I don't think anyone should sit down and immediately say, this should be a series. I think that when you write from your heart and your soul, not to sound like a fluffy Hallmark card there, but you do. I think your characters talk to you. I think they lead you to what you want to do so that you get so involved in the story that you even get excited. It's like you're following your own characters. Some people can make a plot line with all the chapters already done, with the topic sentences, et cetera, like we used to do in high school. But I found that the most fun about writing, the most fun thing is that you can start a chapter and all of a sudden it'll take a turn, a twist that you weren't expecting. And that is a great deal of fun for the writer because all of a sudden you have a brand new action scene or you have a brand new scene that you never even thought of putting in there. So what I tell people is when you sit down at your computer to type, forget about everything. Just release everything you want to release. There's no such thing as having too much because an editor is there for you, a good one. An editor is there for you to make sure that it's the right word count, the right page size, you know, whatever you want to say there, and to make sure it's clean and cut well. But you don't have to all of a sudden just say, oh, I can only have 250 pages or I shouldn't go over 400 pages. That's not necessary. I doubt very much that Margaret Mitchell sat down with Gone with the Wind and said, well, I can't make this over 400 pages. You know, you write what you love, and when the story's over, you know the story's over.
And you know, that's true. But here's something that I discovered. Now I want to ask. I've learned I don't write from my head at all anymore. I write from my gut.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I feel it coming up from down in the lower now rather than the head. So do you feel when you're writing, Amy, that eventually you get into it and it starts, and then all of a sudden it starts coming out of nowhere and you don't realize it, but it's coming from internal rather than the external in your mind?
Oh, God, yes. I think the head part is always with me for the 6 or 7 months I do research, and I make sure that I learn about all these places that I'm going to use. But when I sit down and start to type the actual story, that's not my head. That's my heart, my soul, my characters, like you said, my gut, whatever word you'd like to use. But to me, it's very much the characters leading me where they want to go. And that makes it more exciting. I mean, I'm right in the middle of this adventure, and even I don't know how it's going to end. And that's what makes it exciting. I mean, that's why you pick up a book in the first place. To become very interested and to have fun with the story and get engaged and enticed by the characters. And I think if the writer's not engaged, then the book is going to be a poor book. The reader's going to know that they really weren't interested in their own subject. And that, you know, that's a shame when that happens.
And that's absolutely true. And the call-in number to ask Amy questions about writing, editing, and Amy's also got some knowledge, an extensive knowledge on publishing that she can enlighten you on. It's 718-305-6548, and the website is talentandlowry.blogspot.com for the Talent and Lowry series. And you can go to thewritecompanion.com to find out about her editing, ghostwriting, book reviewing, her multi-talented things she does, and also the Angel Chronicles. And, you know, and as I open up here more and start to understand this, I actually feel that innovative entertaining arts like writing and movie making, that's kind of a new industry really getting ready to start. How do you feel about that, Amy?
Well, I think it's, you know, movie making has been around for decades, and but I think passion has come back. You know, there are a ton of classic movies before. There are a lot of call-ins. There are a ton of classic movies that were written so well, you will remember them forever, you know, but now with more options, and there are many more options for writers. Especially, as I said, with the digital age, you have many more options than you used to. You are able to find more information. You're able to study things you were never able to study before, see things you were never able to see before because of the access to the internet, et cetera. You're able to meet people that you were never able to meet before. So you certainly have a bigger industry now and a bigger chance at being able to do what you want. And of course, as we see, with each new decade comes a new genre that catches hold, and all of a sudden every book you see is like that. I mean, you know, 10 years ago it started the vampires, and everything in the world all of a sudden was vampires. And YA, which was so nice to see, young adult became a big industry again, and it wasn't for a long time. Harry Potter brought it back. And it was nice to see, because now you have young adults reading that weren't, you know, they were basically into their gaming or whatever, and books fell off the charts for them. And now YA is a huge industry. It's a huge genre. And it's, like I said, it's just nice to see that again. And the adult genre, you know, you have the suspense and mystery out there. And you have more ways to publish, although I still have to recommend, try to go with a traditional publisher. You know, there are self-publishing, there are things like that out there, but if you can get in with a traditional publisher, that is the best thing for you and the best thing for your books and the best thing for your career. So if you want to do this as a full-time career, you know, don't take the no's to heart. You know, don't take the, I'm sorry, thanks anyway, we're not interested when you send out a query letter. Don't take it to heart, because just because one person turns you down or 30 people turn you down or more, there is going to be that one person. If you have that passion for your book and you have that passion for your writing, there is going to be that one person out there who wants that book for their collection, and they want you to be one of their authors. So try never, ever to give up on the traditional publishing houses. And ebooks, don't sniff at them, because ebooks are making money hand over fist. Everybody wants ebooks. There's nothing wrong with ebooks. Traditional publishing houses and big, big authors are all doing ebooks now. So, you know, that's a good thing. Sure, everybody would like a hardcover in their hands and say, look what I did. But ebooks in this digital age are what people want. The Kindle, the Nook, you know, that's extensively popular. So just remember, ebooks are not a bad thing. So don't X them out of your career, because you can't really. I mean, you're in the day and age where ebooks are the biggest thing out there right now.
Well, don't nix anything, because you're nixing yourself. But Amy, what I'm really saying, what I'm hearing you say there, but there's such a way with the internet now to connect all globally, you don't know who you're going to connect with that is going to expand you. So don't call or get set on one thing. Isn't that what you're really saying?
Exactly, yes. I mean, it's nice to have a goal, but your goal is to reach as many readers as possible. And try to change something with your books. You know, I used to say, if I reach one reader with my books who would say, oh my God, thank you so much, you've changed my life, just one, then that was the purpose of that book. And I'm ecstatic by that. I really am. I'm not trying to be, again, a Hallmark card. Sure, we'd all love to sell 80 million copies and be the next Stephen King, but when I get lovely letters from readers about the Angel Chronicles or Talent and Lowry, I am beyond humbled by it. When I get a review from someone that makes, you know, one of these books the top pick, I'm humbled to the ground by that. So, you know, with the digital age, you're able to reach out to people you never, as I said before, you never, ever would have been able to reach out to. Just be careful. Make smart decisions. If you are wary or new to the industry, try to hook up with someone who can help you, answer your questions, and just be careful. You know, don't be spending $20,000 for advice. You don't have to. There are people out there who will definitely help you. And that's what we say at The Right Companion, too. I don't charge you money to talk. You know, that's silly. I can help you. If you want me to answer a question, I will answer it. If I don't know the answer, I'll find you the person who does. So just be very careful about your career, but make sure that you reach out to people and make sure those books that you love so much, that you have worked on so hard, gets out there. They get out there so that other people can read it. And like I said, if one person reads that book and it changes their life or makes them happy or anything like that, then I've done my job.
And I'm on your website, therightcompanion.com, and that's therightcompanion.com, The Right Companion. I'm on the four C's, color, cut, clarity, and carrot. Carrot.
Yes.
Tell people how important the color and the cut and the clarity is, and the carrot, all that plays out with an editor and a ghostwriter or a book reviewer, how they can actually help you expand your and energize your book.
Absolutely. Well, I use that for The Right Companion because I really believe that every author who wants to do this, who truly wants to do this as a career, is a precious gem. They are. And, of course, a diamond is a diamond in the rough most of the time, and you have to polish it. Clarity, an editor helps with clarity and cut and color, okay, and consistency and carry everything, because if you get the right one and you want one that will be a partner with you, not a nameless, faceless person, but a partner with you who's just as excited about your book as you are, and they want to help you, an editor is there to cut, edit, make sure that it's as tightened and as good as it can be, They can add color to the book. A lot of times, and even myself, I can't edit my own books. There's no way. After I've looked at them 60,000 times, I'm not going to see the word "and" spelled wrong. It's just not going to happen. I need someone else to look at them and say, well, you know, in chapter 4, you should really add a little more here, et cetera, because I've looked at it too much. So I will continue to miss things that other people won't. That's what an editor is there for. They polish the diamond so that when that author goes to the publishing house and starts that process, that book is as good as it possibly can be. It's in its best state. And it is polished, it is shining, and that a publisher will look at. You know, that a publisher will say, this is a very professional synopsis. This is a very professional query letter. This really gets, these three little paragraphs get me very excited about this book, and now I have to read it. And you want to make sure that when they read it, it's as good and polished as it possibly can be. And that's really what the precious gem motif is all about. If you are a diamond in the rough or you need help, there's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely normal. None of us are perfect, not a chance. I'm a book reviewer for so many different websites and magazines. I can tell you right now there are mistakes, editing, you know, spelling mistakes in the best of the best authors out there. So we're not perfect. We never will be. But an editor will help you get it to the point where a traditional publishing house will look at it. And that's what you want, to get someone on board and to get someone as excited as you are. And if the editor is as excited as you are, they will do the best work, they should do the best work possible to get your book exactly where you want it to be.
Now, Amy, I'm going to put you on the spot. Which book was your most fun to write, do you feel, or all of them?
Oh, God. Well,
I couldn't resist.
I have to say, this is hard. That's not fair.
It isn't. You could say
it
all
isn't.
Of them. That's okay.
I love 13. Okay. That was the first Talent and Lowry book ever written. It was so much fun. I got on a freight train of just action and adventure, and it opened the door for the whole series that I didn't even know was coming. That was thrilling to me. That was my favorite adult book. The Angel Chronicles, however, will always have a special place in my heart. I started writing those 10 years ago when YA, or about, gosh, now 15 years ago. I don't want to say my age, though. A while ago when YA was not very big. And to see them published, to see them in the hands of kids, to get letters from these kids about how they went out and bought posters of the angels because they wanted them over their beds. I mean, that will always have a special place in my heart because that Angel Chronicles opened the door to a million things that I never thought I was going to do. So I have to give that one credit.
Well, here's the thing. The Talent and Lowry, but how did that actually open up the Talent and Lowry series and then your Angel Chronicles actually opened up the Talent and Lowry 13 series?
Well, the Angel Chronicles series was written, as I said, it began 15 years ago about that when I wrote the first one. And, of course, I was new at this, the writing part of it. I had been an editor in the publishing world forever, but actually writing my own, I was new. And I did what a lot of people do. I got turned down by three or four publishers. And I threw it in a desk drawer and said, well, it's just not good enough. And it kept bothering me because I knew it was good enough. So I kept going. And finally, I hit the right person who believed in it as much as I did. And that just opened up the door. That series was in my head, oddly enough, from the very beginning. I didn't think I could do Matthew and Emily, who are the partners, the Warrior Angel partnership in these books. I knew I couldn't tell their story in one book. It would have been impossible, and it would have been a book that would have been way too long. So that was actually in there. With Talent and Lowry, that came about completely by mistake, by something I never assumed. It was a conversation that I was having with a friend, and she was talking about, I don't even remember, horoscopes or something like that. and astrological signs. And all of a sudden, I thought about the New York Public Library and something I had heard a very long time ago about Andrew Carnegie, and boom, it just hit me square in the face, and that's how it began, and I just haven't been able to stop. There will be 7 in total. We already have 5 done. I'm working on the 4th, editing it and putting it together before another editor sees it, but you know, we're going to continue, and the plot lines are out there for 7. So it'll be interesting.
It sounds like fun to me. And, Amy, we've ran out of time again. And you can find her books at therightcompanion.com, amazon.com, and at talentandlowry.blogspot.com. You can find all of Amy's books. Amy, give people some writing wisdom, and I'm going to close out the show.
My wisdom is always the same. You will know in your gut and your heart and your soul if this is what you're supposed to do. Do it, and do not let anybody slam a door in your face, because if this is what you're going to do, you can do it. And as long as you believe in the book, so will the readers.
And I'll tell you how good editor Amy is. She can edit my stuff. She's outstanding. Thank you, Amy.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And we'll be here next Tuesday and Thursday, and we have Amy back so people can learn about editing, publishing, and actually getting an insight to their dream. Anyway, thank you, Amy, and thank you all the listeners.
You're welcome. Thank you, Robert.